The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For this purpose, I have to do both. So, welcome to IMC. It's nice to sit with you all. And I hope it was nice for you to come together with a group of other people to meditate. It's an unusual thing to do overall in our society. People don't usually sit together for 45 minutes in silence, and or they don't, you know. Well, I appreciate it being here with you a lot. So I wanted to talk a little bit this evening about a particular way of presenting mindfulness practice. There's many ways of presenting it, organizing it, and so different presentations work for different people. So I'd like to offer you one, and maybe some of you would be interesting to get this perspective. And this is to divide the practice into four aspects. And one way of understanding these four is they're sequential, do one after the other. The other is they're completely random, which you do. You know, different aspects, different times, you do different parts of it. another way of understanding it is that you might do all four initially, and then as the practice deepens, some of them drop away, and you're finally just left with maybe one of them or none of them. So the four aspects are stopping, recognizing, feeling, and relaxing. Four things to do. First we stop. Then we recognize what's happening. Then we feel what's happening. We experience what's happening. And then finally there's just relax. Relax with what's happening. And then you do it again. So those four things. And if you do those four as you sit and practice, then your practice will go quite far. So the first one, to stop, is maybe the most important. I'll probably say that each one is the most important. there has to be some stopping in order to be mindful, to practice mindfulness. And what that means is that for many times our minds are busy. We're caught up in our thoughts, we're racing ahead. Some of you meditated here this evening. Probably were surprised at how much momentum your mind had and your thoughts. And, you know, some of you probably were a little bit frustrated because your mind wouldn't shut up. And that's kind of like it wouldn't stop. And just went on, you know, your mind has a mind of its own. And so, but there has to be some stopping. Even if you can't stop your mind, there has to be some little movement of just not completely going head over heels with it. A little bit like step back and noticing, oh, this is what's happening now. Or there's a lot of stopping, just like you just kind of come to a stop. We do that physically, we sit down, and it makes a big difference to physically stop. We physically stop, you know, with our bodies and sit down and have our bodies quiet. And most of us sit with our eyes closed. Some people with their eyes open, but sit with the eyes closed. So we stop seeing. We stop the activity of looking. And many people are very visually focused on the world and or on our screens that we look at. And to stop that looking is a big deal for minds that are always looking and searching and trying to understand what's going on. And so there's a kind of physical stopping. And that allows us to catch up to ourselves, notice what's going on, to check in with ourselves in a way that maybe we couldn't if we just kind of continued doing what we were doing all day long and just gone to the next thing. And I think that for many people, the idea of really stopping in some deep way, just stopping their activities, is a hard thing to do, is a foreign thing for them to do. There's a strong drive to always go on to the next thing and want things. And now that so many people are looking at monitors of one size or another, there's that, if you watch your mind and your eyes and what the kind of the way in which we search, the way in which we're looking, there's kind of a continuous kind of looking and searching on our monitors, seeing what's going on. And so the mind isn't stopped. You know, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? And sometimes it becomes a habit. You know, you stay on the computer for a little bit too long, and you kind of think it's time to stop, but your mind is like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing I can look at? Just keep going and looking. And so there's not any rest in that. The mind doesn't get a chance to rest. And so to stop means to start letting something to rest. Some people, what it means before they can rest, it means they get to find out what's really going on, to feel and notice the momentum. So even though we can't stop, we stop enough to notice how much energy there is going on. So a story. There was a species of humans that were born in the ocean. And they spent their whole lives swimming. And they would swim all over and take care of everything swimming. They're always swimming in the ocean, swimming north and south and every all directions. And it all went on for generations. But at some point, there was one of these humans who thought, this is kind of tiring to always be swimming. Swimming, 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 swimming. Always swimming. And so the person decided, heard rumors that far out to the east there was a place like land, like an island or something. If you went there, there was this kind of like this Shangri-La place where you could, you know, rest because you didn't have to swim. So the person swam and swam and swam and swam for a long time, months and months, but didn't come across anything. Person to ask someone and say, have you heard of that place? Oh, I think it's far to the south. So the person swam for months to the south, swimming, swimming, swimming. Nothing. And someone said, well, to the north. Swimming, swimming for months. Nothing. And then someone said, you know, I think it's really to the west. And so the person swam for maybe years, looking and looking, swimming, you know, a lot of work to swim. And then finally, a person ran into an old elder, wise old person, and said, do you know where the place is where we could finally kind of stop swimming and just rest? I'm exhausted. And the wise person said, oh yes, I know. And the person was really excited. Someone who finally knows, it's not just a rumor. I was like, oh, so excited and happy. And then the person said, well, all you have to do is flip over on your back and float. So a little bit like that's what meditation is about, you know. It's that easy. You just flip over in your mind and float. float in awareness. Float in just being. Stop your swimming. Some of you guys have been swimming for decades. Some of you never even knew until you meditated that all you ever did was swim in your mind. Swim in your thoughts, swim in your desires, swim in your fears, swim in your fantasies. You know, swimming, always doing, 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 doing. And, you know, you might have been better off if you hadn't known that you were always so busy. But then you came to meditate and you realized, oh no. And I never rest. There are people who are so weary. It happens on retreats more than anywhere else, that people go on long meditation retreats, like a week-long retreat, and about, you know, 3-4 days into it, they're kind of like, they come into the interview and they're kind of meeting with the teacher and they're kind of stunned. And they say, I had no idea how incessantly my mind is always going and how exhausted I am. I'm conventionally, I've got all the rest I need. It's nice to be on the retreat. I'm sleeping really well. And it's like I'm sleeping better here than at home. It's getting lots of rest. But now that I'm really paying attention, there's a deep layer of weariness in my mind from this constant going that goes on. So meditation, we're learning to, in a sense, to stop, to float, to rest. And it can be frightening to do that because the messages we've received from our culture and from all kinds of things is that there's always some Shangri-La. There's always something we have to get. We're only successful, we're only right, if we're only praised, we're only a good person if we get this stuff. Something happens, something has to be accomplished. And so then we become like the person who's always swimming, not realizing that what's needed is right here and now. It's not far away. It's just flipping over on your back and resting. There's something very profound. And this, I think all the spiritual traditions that have kind of meditation or deep contemplative mystical aspects to them emphasize how important it is, how valuable it is to stop. That something new gets born out of that stopping. I like to think of it as the life becomes three-dimensional. That we normally, people live in two-dimensional life because it's the dimension of just thoughts and ideas and desires and the spinning of the mind. But once we kind of stop and that layer of the mind can kind of be put in proper perspective, then multiple dimensions of our life begin to show itself. It becomes richer and nicer. So rather than being diminished by stopping, rather than becoming less because we stop, we actually grow and develop more. So I know there's a lot of websites to search now. And so you can get a lot of information, a lot of wonderful experiences, a lot of great things by, you know, the person who visits the most websites wins, right? And I'm sure, you know, we'll come to the pearly gates and God will ask us, how many websites did you visit? And you have to have an accounting. And if you didn't watch enough, you know what happens. So, but actually things, you know, if we, you know, so the pressure, you know, to stop and not get more information provides us with some deeper knowledge, some deeper wisdom, something else happens. So this is a little cheerleading for the value of stopping. Maybe all of you know that. You came here and stopped today to meditate together. The second thing to do in this four-part sequence of mindfulness is to recognize what's going on. And that could actually be the form of stopping. Things don't stop, but you just recognize what's happening. There's a kind of stopping there. Oh, that's what's happening now. It means you're here and now. My mind is out of control. I recognize my mind is out of control. In that moment, there's a little bit of stopping, a little bit not just kind of barreling ahead with the mind out of control. But the second step is recognizing what's going on. And this is probably the most important part of these four. And that is to, so it means to, you know, identify, oh, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm confused, there's a lot of thoughts, there's a lot of energy in my body, there's a lot of feelings, there's other people in the room, the other people are angry, the other people are sad, the other people are kind and friendly. There's a lot of people, there's a few people, there's someone needs my help. So we start recognizing what's going on in the present moment. And to stop thinking about oneself all the time, to stop thinking about one's future, or desires and fears, helps us to recognize more deeply what is actually going on here and now. The wisdom of Buddhism comes from recognizing deeply what is here. I was very impressed many years ago when I read someone talking about Buddhism and said, this person said, everything that you need to know about Buddhism can be discovered through your own powers of observation. Everything you need to know can be discovered through your own power of recognition. You don't have to read a lot of books on Buddhism. You don't have to go into a lot of websites. You don't have to go and listen to a lot of Dharma talks, including this one. But you need to observe, you need to recognize, oh, this is what's going on, this is what's going on. So in the simplest way, it's continuity of mindfulness, being mindful of what's happening while it's happening. And then that begins to help with the three-dimensionality of life, because noticing more and richer and what's going on. Some of you have been on retreat, maybe you've had it in other times in your life, when the mind stops enough our capacity for sensual of our senses become more alert. The doors of perception are more open, they say, and it's quite fun to kind of feel like you walk out of the retreat center, for example, or come out of meditation, and you look at a leaf on the ground or a candy wrapper on the ground, and it's so beautiful. The candy wrapper, it's shiny and nice. It's amazing. Wow. Candy wrapper. You stand looking at it, people think you're strange. It's wow. You know, are you stoned? You know, it's just that, but it isn't just the candy wrapper, it's the leaves, it's the skies, it's people's faces, it's people's, you know, just anything you look at, it kind of sparkles sometimes. It feels very nice. This three-dimensional quality, the richness of this. Nothing has to happen. You don't have to get anything. Just it's so great. So developing this power of being in the present moment, recognizing what's here. The recognition part is more cognitive. It's more kind of labeling or cognitive recognition. Oh, this is what's happening. You can actually say, this is what's happening. But mindfulness is more than mind activity. It's more than just the cognitive aspect of the mind. It's allowing yourself to feel. I like the word feel. I don't know if it works for you. It allows you to experience it physically, viscerally, to actually kind of sense, what is this experience like? So it's one thing now this evening to recognize that the air conditioner is on. It's another thing to recognize that you are unhappy and it's cold, or happy that it's on, or whatever. It's another thing to kind of take a moment to really feel what it's like on your skin, if you feel a little bit of cold air going across your skin, and really sense it from the perspective of your arms. Like for me, I have a short sleeve shirt on. So what is it? What's the experience in my arms of feeling the air conditioner? What's the experience of my ears hearing the hum? What is it like? What's that like? So it's like, what is the experience of the senses themselves of whatever is happening? So what does it feel like? Anything at all, viscerally, what does it feel like in your stomach? What does it feel like in your chest? You're in a conversation with someone. What are actually the feelings, these sensual experiences of your body as you're there, as you're going on? So you want to be able to experience something more than just know intellectually what's happening. You want to be able to be with the experience in a fuller way. And this also is moving into more the three-dimensional quality of the experience. There's a lot more information about what's happening in ourselves and around us if we tune in to the physical embodied experience of what's happening in the moment, as opposed to just kind of thinking about it or being cognitive about it. For one thing, we can have a richer experience of our emotions, the emotional relationship to what's going on, the impact experience has on us. So that's the third. So first we want to stop, then we want to recognize, and then we want to feel the experience. And then the fourth thing to do is to relax. Whatever is going on, relax. Maybe you're already relaxed. Maybe you don't need to relax then. But most people, there's usually some space to relax around what's going on. So whatever is happening, relax around it. And many times in life, the tension we have around whatever is happening isn't really that helpful. Occasionally it might be helpful. Hopefully you'll have the wisdom to know when you're supposed to be tense. But I would argue that, 95% of your tension is not needed. And in fact, tension keeps us in this two-dimensional world. It keeps us from really connecting more deeply with what's going on, partly because tension is a kind of a closing down or a tightening up or a freezing that keeps us kind of in a state of kind of a little bit frozen, so at least part of us, a little frozen state. Chronically tense muscles go numb. And so that's a kind of freezing, or kind of, we're not as the experience of life is not so rich. So to recognize what's happening, feel it. By feeling it in your body, feeling what's going on, we start recognizing also where the tension is. And then can we relax? Are you holding your belly? Soften the belly. Are you holding your shoulders? Can you just relax your shoulders a little bit? It doesn't have to be a lot, just a teeny bit. I like the idea sometimes of when I can't relax, softening around something. Just softening around that tension. That's it, that's enough. Sometimes it's interesting to notice what you're doing with your hands or your arms. Are there ways of having your hands be more relaxed? Or your arms? And noticing your posture. Is your posture tense? Or is it relaxed? Is the way your feet are touching the floor, are they relaxed or are they tense? Sometimes you can watch people, they're kind of, you know, they push their feet back and they're on their toes. It just kind of feels like a little tense. They're holding themselves. Where's your tension? Is there tension around your forehead? Is there tension in your brain, around your eyes? Is it possible to relax? It's possible to relax too much. And this emphasis on having a relaxed posture, some people interpret that to mean they should be a couch potato. Kind of, they should slump. The deepest relaxation that a human being can experience happens actually when we're either in the corpse posture in yoga or sitting upright in the cross lotus position, cross-legged position. And if you're in a chair, the deepest relaxation doesn't come from using the backrest, but actually if all things are kind of normal, I suppose, or when healthy or something, if you don't have a back issue or something, that is sitting upright in a straight back, because it allows the musculature of your shoulders and everything to relax most deeply when you're well aligned in your spine. So we don't want to slump. That doesn't really allow for the deepest relaxation. Relaxation also supports the letting go of the clinging in our mind. Most tension involves we're obsessing about something, we're holding on to something, we're clinging to something, a thought, an idea, a wish, a fear. We're locked on to some strong emotion, perhaps. The locking on in the mind is often the source of our tension, physical tension. If we can relax our physical tension, it often supports the relaxation of the mind or of the heart. So to relax. Don't make it a big project to relax. Don't get tense relaxing. Don't try too hard, but a little bit, just a little bit. And then go back and do the cycle again. Now that you're relaxed, what can you stop doing? What needs to be recognized now? What can be felt more fully? And now, having felt it more fully, what now further can relax? So you follow that cycle. If you follow that cycle through a period of meditation, I think you'll probably find meditation very satisfying. Never be very ambitious when you meditate. Take your time, lots of time. That's what what the stopping means. Give yourself lots of time. Meditation needs to be inefficient. Isn't that terrible? The reason it needs to be inefficient is that the drive for efficiency is just more movement and speediness and activity of the mind. It's more swimming. We have to really stop swimming. The person who flips over in the water to float, gets the instruction, oh, you can just flip over in the water and float, and says, yes, but I think, I guess I have to swim first to get there. I have to swim harder so I can flip over and float. So that only by swimming can I be efficient. No, stop being efficient. Stop trying to get anywhere. But anyway, so it takes lots of time. Give yourself time. Time for meditators is healing. Time is health. Time just to be is so great. So as we do these steps, stop, recognize, feel, and relax, at some point, you don't need to relax anymore. At some point, relaxing anymore gets in the way. Just you're relaxed in an adequate way, and to try to be even more relaxed, this just gets in the way. Just more doing. And so we stop relaxing. And then at some point, the effort to keep recognizing what's going on, or that's not really needed anymore. You're just really there. You're grounded in the present moment. You know, you don't have to recognize what's going on. You are what's going on, or what's going on just shows itself to you very clearly. You don't have to make any effort to recognize. You also don't have to make any effort anymore to feel. It's because you're just there in your body. Just everything's being felt very clearly. And there are times you don't need to don't need to do anything to stop. In fact, to try to stop is just one more doing. Initially, it's kind of nice to stop or try to stop or stop in small steps. But the paradox is the activity of stopping is still a doing. So at some point, as you get more and more relaxed, more still, more quiet, even the effort to try to stop more keeps you from stopping. And the best thing you can do is to do less. Just be. And let the whole process, at some point the process begins kind of doing itself. You don't need to do anything anymore to practice. You just have to very gently love the present moment, love the process, love attention. Just be there in a dedicated way. And then the process begins to unfold more and more on its own. So, to stop, to recognize, to feel, and to relax. Any questions about that? Anything anybody would like to ask? Yeah, can you pass this back? Oh, I went to the back row there.
Is there any particular wisdom in the order? The reason why I say that is I was listening to you, and my shoulders, as they usually are, up around my ears. And it occurred to me that maybe I need to start with relaxing.
Sure. I think that different times, different circumstances, different ones as a starting point, as the gate. And you know, also stopping and relaxing are not that different from each other. Right? So another way of saying relax is saying stop being tense. So, you know, but different, sometimes recognizing is the most important. That's why I was kind of joking. Each of them is the most important, right? So meaning that different times, different ones are important. But yeah, but you might experiment with doing lots of relaxing. Yes, but great. But could you wait for the mic to come to you? Because some people have hearing system devices, and they can't hear the question unless we are on the mic.
I think one thing that happens often to very analytical people when they're trying to stop their thoughts and recognize them and relax around them is there's kind of this backlash of, no, but I need to keep thinking this through and being agitated because I'm figuring out
important
the answer.
Things, yeah.
You know, and if I say it's something you feel really guilty about, it's like, well, if I just stop, then I'm living ignorance. I'm not finding this important thing. So what would your advice be if you find yourself with particular issues of shame or self-hatred caught up in this desire that you really need to not relax. It's really important.
Oh, great. Well, the first thing I would say if, for people like that is I would actually congratulate them for seeing clearly what's going on. There's some clarity there, recognizing that. That's a huge step. It's something to feel good about, to have that recognition. Not just be weighed down by it or feel bad, but actually feel good, oh, there's the act of recognition. And then maybe it needs more attention. To spend time getting to know that part of oneself better. To maybe it's something that needs to be cared for and listened to. Maybe by listening to that voice, that tendency in a deep way, maybe it's never been listened to before. Maybe there's depths and aspects of it that you don't even know. And only by listening deeply can you discover what's really needed. Because chances are that what's really needed is not figuring out the answer. Maybe just being loved. And something inside can relax if it feels cared for and listened to and respected.
Thank you.
Yeah, is there another mic over here now? Or yeah, can you move it up here to the front?
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing to admit, but I realize that the only time that I'm 100 really, really relaxed is when I'm lying down.
Great. I'm glad you recognize that. I hope you have a chance to lay down regularly.
Yeah. Like sitting down, I can't ever be.
So the reason you say you're embarrassed is because in the context of meditation, that we often sit up when we're meditating. Yeah. So I think that for you to recognize that you get really relaxed when you lay down, then it's a tool, it's a resource for you that you should probably use if it's helpful for you. If you want to meditate also, besides just relaxing, then you need to experiment and find out whether your meditation really deepens by being relaxed in the kind of way you are lying down, or whether you need to sit up to allow for the alertness for something even deeper to happen. So you might want to experiment. And maybe if after a busy day, a tense day, maybe use your tool of laying down and to relax for 5-10 minutes and then sit up and see if you can keep some of that relaxation, but see if the sitting up allows for some kind of alertness to go on. And chances are that the deepest relaxation, you know, of the mind and the heart won't happen when you're lying down, unless you're a very good meditator. There are some people who meditate that way because they have to. But probably, you know, and also to learn how to have a relaxed mind and heart sitting upright, it's closer to how we live our lives. Most of our lives are upright. So you might actually learn then how to continue that in your daily life better than if you're always relying on lying down. But I think for you to discover that for yourself is great. You should use that. Lie down sometimes.
Well, I hadn't thought about the trying to sit up because, I mean, I realized in the last few years, because I used to be able to, I find even in a movie theater, if I'm sitting, I tend to tense up even when I'm supposedly relaxing.
So. I see. So one of the things you might, so this is always the approach of mindfulness, is when you notice something like that you're always tensing up, is don't be in a hurry to stop that, but study it. So to help these, stop means I'm going to stop for my tension and pay attention to it, and I'm going to recognize the tension, clearly what the nature of the tension, what is it, where is it, how does it work, what's going on, and then feel it more fully. And sometimes that's needed. You need to do that for a long time. That's actually more important than the relaxing. Because sometimes if emphasis on relaxing or letting go can be a bypass where we don't really learn what's happening. And what we're really looking for is to learn what the underlying conditions are, causes are, for why we get tense. And if we figure out a quick way to relax, and bypass understanding, then we go back into the world and we'll just tense up again the next chance we have. So you might want to also take some time to not relax, but get to know your tension a lot better. Really try to figure out what's going on. And one of the interesting ways of getting to know about tension also, so sometimes when you are tense, stop and really get to know what's going on, emotionally, physically, cognitively, what's going on. But if you have your wonderful tool of laying down and relaxing deeply, do that. But then as you leave that relaxed state and start your day again, your activity, pay very careful attention to notice what's the first little symptoms of tension coming back. And then stop and look at that. Get to know what happened there, because that might be a real key. Okay? So one, I think we have time for one more. It's out in the outer hall.
I wanted to know, when you're sleeping, how can you completely always relax when you're sleeping?
Oh, in sleeping. I don't know if not everyone's relaxed completely when they're sleeping. When I was in many periods of my life where I was surprised, especially when I was really surprised when I was in the monastery, it's when I first discovered this, was that I'd be more relaxed after the morning meditation than I was when I woke up. I don't know. I think for many people, sleep certainly is rejuvenating. It can be relaxing, but there's deeper layers of relaxation possible through meditation and being alert. But don't just make relaxing being the name of the game. We don't want to, you know, we don't want just the world of people just kind of walking around relaxed. Probably some of you get fired from your jobs if you. There is appropriate, I don't call it tension, but there is appropriate, I don't know what to call it.
Application?
There's appropriate tension. There's appropriate tautness. There is appropriate kind of, you know, you tell a marathon racer, just relax. You know, you're supposed to not, certainly some relaxation, but anyway, don't make relaxation the name of the game only, but there's value.
Right effort.
Right effort.
Yeah.
So we should stop. It's 9 o'clock, but if you can just come up afterwards and ask me if you'd like. And so you might experiment with these four steps and see which of them is you enjoy the most and which of them you need the most. Thank you.